Hey guys, welcome to The Rebirth of a Once Married Latina, a podcast where I share my journey through marriage, divorce, and the life that comes after it. On this podcast, we'll talk about things like parenthood, co-parenting, the triumphs and tribulations of a single parent, the stigmas of divorce, trauma, mental health, and the healing that comes with all of that. But don't fret, my friends, we'll cover the fun things too, like sex, relationships, diet and exercise, beauty products, and anything else that we might find interesting. So grab your podcast essentials and join me for the ride. Welcome back, guys, to another episode of The Rebirth of a Once Married Latina. As I was listening to the two episodes that are up, I realized that I hadn't really talked about why I got divorced or what pushed me to get divorced. And someone asked me, well, are you going to share your reason and your story? And I said, absolutely. I've shared my story along the way. I've always been an open book. I've always shared my whys behind the divorce. And I've been pretty transparent on social media with everybody. And I've been really transparent with my family and my friends. But I thought I would share my top five reasons with you. A disclaimer here, we are going to talk about things like abuse in all forms and some other triggers, so be forewarned that might come up. Let's get right into it, shall we? So first and foremost, my disclaimer like always, right? Divorce is a very hard choice to make. Divorce is not the goal. It was never my goal. When I got married, my goal was to stay married happily ever after and raise a family with this person that I was in love with. Divorce is never the goal. It's not the easy way out. And it's definitely not an easy choice. I think sometimes that when people hear that someone is getting divorced, they automatically assume that they haven't tried hard enough, or they just gave up, or they didn't even bother to try at all. Let me be the one to tell you that that is not true. At least for me, when I finally made the decision that this had to happen, it was the hardest decision I've ever made in my entire life. Because you think about the people that are involved, you think about the people that you're disappointing, you think about your children, your in-laws, you think about everything, how it's going to affect everyone around you. It takes a lot of time. For me, it took 3 years to finally decide that I just couldn't do it anymore. It takes a lot of growth, a lot of self-love to say, I can't do this anymore. And a lot of times, a lot of stuff has to happen before you get to that point. Sometimes partners, marriages, husbands, and wives can work it out. Sometimes you can't. And when it's the ones that you can't, just understand that it wasn't an easy choice. So if you know anyone going through divorce, if you know anyone who's thinking about divorce, from the bottom of my heart, I ask you not to say things like, well, have you tried? Are you just giving up? Because they've tried. No one wakes up one day and says, today looks like a great day to get divorced. It doesn't happen like that. For me, it took a lot of things. Mental abuse, growth on my part. It took a lot of looking within me and like really seeing things for myself and for my child. I put together a very long, extensive list of all the reasons why I decided to get a divorce. I broke it down to 5 categories. I made a really long list of the reasons why. And out of all the reasons why, they kept coming back to 5 really important things. So the first one was really easy to identify, and it was just abuse. And when I say abuse, I don't mean physical abuse. I mean verbal abuse, mental abuse, body shaming, financial abuse. And it's a thing, guys. If you don't know what financial abuse is, look it up because it is a thing. I think when we hear the word abuse, we automatically think physical. And at the beginning of the relationship, it wasn't physical. Or that towards the end of the relationship, yes, it got physical. I always believed that because he wasn't putting his hands on me, it wasn't abuse. Because he wasn't leaving me marked up like on the television shows, it wasn't abuse. But we don't talk about the other forms of abuse, right? So for me, it was a lot of verbal abuse. When I say verbal abuse, I mean anything from body shaming to manipulation to narcissistic behavior where I was seen to be the crazy one. Gaslighting. I was forever being gaslighted in the marriage. And that all messes with you, right? It all fucks with your head. It makes you start to question yourself and your own reality. And it also, it's mental abuse. It took me a really long time to understand that I was being abused emotionally. And once I understood that, it even took longer for me to believe it, that this was happening to me. Because listen, if you knew me or if you know me, this isn't this timid, quiet, won't stand up for herself person. That's not who I am. I've always been someone who puts herself out there and is confident, gets stuff done, and stands up for herself and stands up for the people around her. And I've always been very proud of that. And it's something that my ex-husband really appreciated about me and really liked until it was no longer convenient for him. And then that's when the narcissistic behavior on his end kicked in. And it started being a way to control me. And I allowed it because I wanted to be a good wife. And it's what you do. That's just the way men are. You put up with it. He's not hitting you. You have a home. He's a great provider. What more do you want? So he gets drunk and he yells at you every once in a while. Get over it. We all deal with it. Ignore him. Well, it's really hard to ignore it when it becomes constant. I also had to understand that I was being treated unfairly and that I was being hurt in a way that I didn't deserve it. A really big part of why I stayed was because I believed that I deserved this type of treatment because my bills were paid, because I did have the luxury of staying home, because I did have a house, I had a car, I had medical insurance, my son had his own room. You know, we weren't living like the Kardashians, but we were okay. And I was constantly told that I wasn't pitching in. I wasn't making those things happen, that I was just riding someone's coattails, that I was just in it for the free ride. And so it made me believe in my head that I deserve that because I wasn't doing anything. Once I started to really open my eyes and become aware of what was happening, I started realizing that my work did matter. Even if I didn't go outside of the home to work, what I was doing, raising our child, taking care of the home, you know, being a wife, all of those things, it adds up. The mental abuse that began, it was mind games. I mean, I can sit here and go on and on. Being made to believe that something that was actually happening was not happening. Oh, I didn't say that. No, you're absolutely wrong. I did not say that. When did I ever say that? Then you start to question yourself. Years and years and years of this is it's conditioning. Also being told that I was too fat. And then when I lost the weight, I was too thin. I wasn't Mexican enough. I didn't look Mexican enough. I was a bad mom. I didn't look good as a brunette. I only looked good as a blonde. No one was ever going to want me if I ever left. I was too hard to love. I was too difficult. You want too much. Yeah, I do want a lot. I want it all. It's possible. I want it all. That doesn't make me a difficult person. I now know that, you know, while I was married, I was constantly told like, you're never happy. You're never happy. And it's like, it's not that I was never happy. It's okay to want more and it's okay to not want more. The mental abuse just didn't stop with like pointing out what was wrong with my body, like what was wrong with certain parts of my body and, you know, being told no one's going to want to ever sleep with me because I was, you know, busted or being made fun of like my body parts. Like I don't think you guys want to hear that. We won't get into it, but being told like, no one's ever going to want to fuck you. Like you're fucking disgusting. Who's going to want to sleep with you? Like, don't fucking touch me. You're gross. It gets in your head because this is the person that you love. You know, they're supposed to love you back. And if he's saying those things to you, then it must be true because he loves me. Why would he say it otherwise? Being told as a wife and as a female by your husband constantly that he's just not that into you, that right now the way you look isn't doing it for him, not having sex. And I like having sex. I really enjoyed having sex with my husband. When we had a really great sex life, it was really good. But then it turned into punishment because he knew that that's what I enjoyed and I liked it. It turned into him not putting out and constantly telling me he didn't want to sleep with me because I was busted or I didn't look a certain way or I didn't feel a certain way. I remember one time I told my sister, like, this is happening, and she encouraged me to go buy lingerie, and I did, and I came home and I put it on for him, and he literally grabbed my hips. I was straddling him and he took me off of him and he said, I'm just not that into you right now. And you shouldn't be wearing clothes like that because clothes like that is not meant for women like you. Look at how fat you are. That does not look cute on you. What are you trying to prove with that? You don't look like so-and-so. So go take it off. Not just that, but making me feel like no man was ever going to want to be with me. No man was ever going to take pleasure in me. My sexuality does not define me, but it is a part of my femininity, and it's a part that I embrace and I like. But when you're told that, it puts you in a really bad place. Financial abuse. I wasn't allowed to ask about money. His money was his money. My money was my money. I wasn't allowed to ask what bills were getting paid, what bills were not getting paid. I wasn't allowed to ask if our rent was getting paid. I remember one time I opened up a credit card bill addressed to him legitimately on accident, and it was snatched out of my hands and told, you don't fucking pay anything, so you don't look at the bills. But then we never had money. I didn't know where our money was going. Money was always thrown in my face. We never had enough of it. At the time when I wasn't working, I had to ask for certain necessities. It was fucking hell. I much rather would have not asked or asked my mom for money. You know, I was really lucky with a good mother-in-law because I could ask her, like, hey, I need this. Like, don't make it be known that I'm asking you. Being constantly told that you're a financial burden. But then when you do go out and work, it's not enough. Or dinner isn't made on time. Or the house is a mess. Nothing was ever good enough. And that took a toll on me in so many ways. And you get to the point when it's just like, I can't do this anymore. People have often asked me, well, why didn't you fight back? Like, why didn't you push back? Why didn't you try to get help? I did those things. I did push back. And when I did push back, it was even worse. When I did try to get help or suggest we get help, it was, you're the fucking crazy one. You go get help and then you come back fixed. So unless two people want to work at it together, you know, you can't fix something or someone that doesn't want to get help. You can't address the issues that don't want to be addressed. And doing it by yourself is fighting an uphill battle. It's impossible. So the first one, heavy one, I thought we'd get the heaviest one out of the way. But for sure, there came a day when I said, I can't do this anymore. I'm done. That day was when he finally did lay hands on me. It wasn't the first time he had done it. It was probably like the second time, but that time my son was old enough to realize what was happening. And my child was literally in the middle of the situation. And when he slammed my head up against that car and then shut the door on my face, and my child was screaming in the back seat, I knew that if I didn't say hasta aquí, like this is it, that was going to be my life forever. It had crossed that line from just verbal and mental and financial and non-physical to physical. And for me, I know that that was my rock bottom. I couldn't subject myself to that. And more so, I didn't want my child living in a house where he saw this behavior because I'm not raising a child like that. I will not let him. By him, I mean my child. I won't allow that to happen. And so what's the first thing that needs to happen? I needed to get out of there. That was it. Reason number two, alcoholism. And let me tell you, not every time, but most of the times when there was an abusive behavior going on, I can guarantee you alcohol had something to do with it. Alcohol is a poison like no other. If you cannot have some sort of control over your drinking, then I suggest you just don't drink. If one cannot drink responsibly, when should not drink. The physical abuse that I went through with alcohol in the picture was awful. Not only myself, but like my son. You know, when I would hear people talk about this, I would think, okay, it's like one day. No. It's like a 3-day festival that begins with one drink, ends up with a full-blown raging alcoholic, and then you have to deal with the aftermath. I was able to deal and cope with the drinking. I quickly learned in my marriage how to deal with this new normal. You learn how to cope with it. It becomes the norm. So you figure out what works for you and what works for your partner and what's going to trigger it and make it worse. And you start conditioning yourself. This is very important because it's going to come back later on the podcast. You start to condition yourself to the behavior that occurs when they are drinking. I learned quickly to accommodate them and to just deal with the drunken person in my home. What I had a very difficult time coping with was the aftermath. I hated the day after the binge drinking. I loathed it. Early on in the marriage, I thought that if I yelled and screamed and threw an even bigger fit than he did the day before, I could somehow make him see or acknowledge or apologize for his behavior. But when you're dealing with a narcissistic person, they won't do that for you. And I had to learn that. It's something I know now. I definitely did not know that when I was married. So when you have a narcissist who is also an alcoholic, you so badly want them to just acknowledge it, acknowledge their behavior, acknowledge what they did was wrong, acknowledge how hurt they made you feel, but they're not going to do it, which then would make me completely irate. And I would yell and kick and scream. I wanted something from him. Some sort of reaction, and he didn't give it to me, and especially because he was hungover the next day. This usually happened on Sundays. And so then I would push him to his limits where he would yell and snap, still not acknowledging the behavior, still not giving me an apology, just tell me how ridiculous I was behaving, how I was ruining his day, which then made me feel bad. And it made me feel like I did something wrong. As the years went on and as the drinking continued, I learned that if I didn't want to deal with that the next day, the hungover day, I had to either A, leave the house, or B, just pretend like nothing had happened and continue with our day. Depending on what mood I was in, I would either wake up really early on Sunday, wake up before him, get my child dressed, and we would just leave. We would go to my mom's house. We would go to the store. We would just try to be out and come home at a reasonable hour because I couldn't not be gone all day, right? Because then I was a horrible wife. And by that time, I had given him space. And his way of apologizing was saying, you don't have to cook today. Let's go get dinner. Let's go get lunch. And that's what we did. If I stayed in the home the day after, I didn't make any noise. I made sure our baby didn't bother him. I let him sleep it off. I did whatever I could to just stay out of his way as much as possible. For me, being someone that is very heavily opinionated and very passionate about certain things, that was the hardest, most humiliating thing I had to do. I learned quickly that it's better just to pretend like nothing has happened and we'll just suppress things and keep them down. And that's how we're going to deal with things. The hateful things he said to me were never acknowledged. There was never an apology. If things were broken or if the house was in a disarray because of his actions the night before, I just cleaned it up and we just kept going. And so by the time he got up, it was like if we were back to being perfect. The worst thing that I remember was the day that he was completely drunk on a Mother's Day. Thank you very much. And I was done. My son was done. We were ready to go home. And I'll give you the short version. I decided to leave a family gathering on his side of the family early, and he wanted to stay and continue drinking. I took my son home. I bathed him. I got him ready for bed. I got in the shower. I was getting myself ready for bed. And I knew I was going to get in trouble because I left. I knew that was going to come back and bite me in the ass. We were both done. We had had a very long day. As I was getting out of the shower, I literally had on underwear and a t-shirt because we were going to go to bed. My son was in a onesie and a diaper. He was in his crib. He came storming in, and I know I was not the only factor as to why he was angry. I know there was other parts to it, but the point is that I received the punishment, but my child did as well. And that day was one of the most horrible, horrible nights of my life. I, for whatever reason, picked up my child and put him on our bed. I think I was trying to get dressed or whatever, and I wasn't going to argue with him. I knew better just to let him sleep it off, but he came in a rage. He started yelling at me. He started saying how he hated me, how he wished he would have never married me, how fat I was, how ugly I was, that I was just riding his coattails. I was a fucking bitch. And I just took it and I went into our bedroom and I started getting an outfit ready for myself to go put in the baby's room. I don't know why my son was in our bedroom and my ex-husband was on our bed, and he took my son in his arms and he started sobbing. And a fear came over my body like no other. If you're a mom, you know this feeling of when your children are in danger. And we're talking about his dad. So I quickly got my clothes. I ran into the kid's room. I grabbed a pajama set for him. I put it in a diaper bag and I put it near the door. And I walked to the bedroom. And because I was still not fully 100% where I'm at now, I still wanted him to somehow apologize and acknowledge. I would do this thing where I would hit the record button on my phone and I would try to record the behavior, because I would show it to him the next day, which was never a good idea because it would just make him even more mad. So I hit the record button and he saw it, and he managed to take my phone, and he still had my child. And I begged and pleaded with him to just give me my kid, and he said no. That day, he ended up breaking a finger of mine. And of course, it wasn't his fault. It was my fault, because I'm the one that put my hand behind our headboard. And when he hit the headboard, he hit it hard enough to where my fingers got caught between the headboard and the wall. But it was my fault. It was not his fault. I was trying to pry my child out of his arms, and I was trying to get my phone because I needed to leave. I managed to do both things. I managed to get the car keys. I forgot all about the bag. I strapped my kid in the car and I left, because I didn't want to go to my mom's house. I drove to my mother-in-law's house. When I got there, she looked at me and she said, "What are you wearing?" And I said, "What?" And she said, "What are you wearing?" And I looked down and I was still in my t-shirt and my underwear. My child was still in a onesie and a diaper. And I told her what had happened. I told her I just needed to leave. And God bless my mother-in-law. She opened the door and we both sat and cried and cried and cried. And she looked at me and she said, "You know, this is why you should always carry an emergency bag in your car. You should have a pair of clothes for yourself, a jacket for yourself, at least two outfits for the baby, some diapers, some wipes." I don't think he was in formula anymore. Some shoes and a jacket for him. Because when things like this happen, you at least have that in your car. And I looked at her. I didn't say anything. I just agreed and I told her she was right. And I was going to bed that night in my mother-in-law's clothes because I didn't have anything, thinking about what she said, how I should have an emergency bag in my car because of events like this. Thought to myself, this is not normal. I should not have to have an emergency bag in my car for me and my kid, because this is not normal. That is not normal. Normal people don't do that. And I realized at that moment that if I continued to stay in that marriage with this person who had a drinking problem, that was going to be my normal, not only for me, but for our child. I didn't want that to be the normal for my son. That night, he was arrested. I came home to curtain rods being pulled from the wall. Literally, my kitchen table broken, my microwave broken. My measuring cups that I had treasured from San Francisco were just in shattered pieces everywhere. But there I went to get him out of jail. I even stopped and bought him a really cold Gatorade because I knew he would want a Gatorade. I left my son with my mother-in-law to go take care of this. And I brought him home. He didn't say thank you. He didn't apologize. He didn't ask for his son. He said it was my fault. Because if I would have stayed, if I just would have stayed with him that night and let it play out, he would have not done what he did and he would have not gone to jail. So this one was on me. And I looked at him like, "Are you kidding me?" I didn't argue back. I didn't say he was wrong. I just said, "I'm sorry."
You're right, I should have stayed. Maybe because part of me believed it was my fault. Maybe because I had learned to just cope. I had conditioned myself to just deal with it. Maybe because I just was done. And I much rather would have just said yes than to sit there and have another argument with him. And so he went into the garage and I cleaned up the mess, literally. And we went to go pick up my son and complete dead silence in the car. And like always, he rewarded me with dinner. You don't have to make dinner tonight. Let's go get dinner. And we just went about our day like if nothing happened. Since then, alcohol, dealing with alcoholism, with people who have that, has been a constant in my life. That was not my rock bottom, guys. I still stayed with him a few years after that. But also, I know people in my life who still drink and who don't know their own limitations. And I see these patterns. And a lot of these people are men, Latino men. And so I ask myself, and I ask my sister, and I ask people around me, is there a connection between alcohol and Latino men? There isn't enough studies. I've searched, believe me, I've searched, that support any of this. But then my sister said something to me one day that made me go, oh, that makes sense. Is it because we, and I say we because I include myself in this, is it because we don't allow our men in our Latino community to express their feelings or go to therapy or cry or ask how they're doing emotionally? We don't teach them how to process their emotions. And so they drink to numb it. And that's how they deal with things. I don't know. I really don't know if that's the case. But I hope that in this, we can start that conversation and we can encourage not only Latino men, but everyone in our community, that it's important to recognize your feelings, to recognize the issues. And then once we do that, do the work. Because if you're just suppressing it with drugs or alcohol or food, whatever your vice is, it's not a healthy way to live. And if we don't do it now and we have children, that cycle continues. And the day that I decided that enough was enough was the day that my son was old enough to be very, very aware of what was happening. And when that police officer told me, this isn't the first time we come out to your house, and if you don't leave, it's not going to be the last time. And you see that little boy back there in the backseat? He's going to do the same thing. Is that what you want? Is that what you want for him? I had heard that. But that day, something just clicked. And I said, okay, enough is enough. So no, it wasn't an easy choice. But here I am. I thought the first one was a heavy one. That one was intense. But in all of that, and I hate to say this because it sounds really cheesy and corny, right? If I wouldn't have gone through all of that, I wouldn't be here where I'm at today. Did I deserve all that? No. But I also took part in it because I didn't leave. A part of me liked playing the victim. A part of me was a portion of the problem. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. The solution was for me to get help and leave. And I didn't do that. It took me a really long time to do that. Looking back now, I know it's because I didn't love myself. And we've all heard it. You have to learn to love yourself before you can love someone else. I really didn't appreciate those words until now. When I met my ex-husband, I thought I was in a good place. The truth was, I wasn't. The truth was, I met someone who was even more broken than I was, and I was able to recognize the problems, because it's always easier to work on someone else than it is to work on yourself. And I was able to show him how good it could be with him and me together. And I ignored everything that I was going through, and I wasn't my authentic self. I just wanted to be what he needed me to be at that time. And again, I didn't know that then. That's how I was conditioned as a child. That's what I knew. So that's what I did. And I knew I should go to therapy. And I knew there was issues that I had with my mom and my dad that I needed to resolve. And I knew that there was childhood trauma it was just really easy to ignore it with someone in my life with even bigger problems. And I was able to fix that. I didn't love myself. So through all of that crap that I went through, I started to slowly look within and start healing and start loving myself. And that looks differently for everyone. For me, I went to a doctor's appointment because I was severely depressed and my anxiety was coming back. And I asked my doctor for help. However, I didn't want to go on medication because I had a child. And being on antidepressants and anxiety medication made me feel a certain way that was not productive as a mother. And she turned me away and she said to me, "My job is to give you medication to help you feel better. So if you're not willing to take the medication, then I don't know what you're doing here. Thank you, Kaiser Permanente." Mm-hmm. So I looked at her and I got very upset and said, "Thank you for your time." I was crying, like ugly crying, and I left. And as I was leaving, there was a parenting book that had a lot of Latina moms on the cover, and I picked it up and I sat in my car and I read through the article. And I was so alone and I was so disconnected from everybody, and I had done this to myself. But I looked at these women and I said, I want to be like that. I want to be a happy mom. I want to be a happy female. Like, you could just see, you could feel it from that article. And one of the moms on there was on the cover. Her name is Linda Garcia, and she goes by Luz Royer, and you can find her on Instagram. And at the time, she had a podcast about healing and holisticness and spirituality. And I started listening to her. And then I found Luis Octavio from Nos Vemos en el Swap Meet, who has also a really great podcast. And he's a really fantastic entrepreneur. And he had this event called Podcast Stereo Fest. And I went to it because I wanted to be surrounded by these people. And slowly but surely, I started exploring different areas and different alternatives to get better. And I started using essential oils. Bergamot saved my life. I would apply it every day. And it's really great if you're feeling down. And I started running again and I started walking. And little by little, I started making changes. And then I started wearing makeup again. And I started to eat better. And I started to hang out with my sister more. And I started to do things that felt good. This is all called self-care, right? You should do it. But I was being told that I was being selfish and that I was being a bad mom, that I was being a bad wife. Because how dare I go get my hair done for 3 hours on a Saturday? You want to get a pedicure? What? You want to go get a massage? No. So I had to do things a las escondidas. Like, literally, some of these things that I did for myself, like, I was into tanning. I know I don't do it anymore. It's bad for my skin. I had to do behind his back while he was at work. Pedicures I did when I had someone watch my son while he was at work. You know, exercising and running, it made me feel good. It had to be done after everything else was done. Going to the stone store was something that I looked forward to, and it was something my sister and I bonded over. And I did that on my time when he wasn't home. I wasn't allowed to be my true authentic self when he was at home. I wasn't allowed to practice self-care measures when he was at home. I kept telling myself that that wasn't okay, that I should be able to do it in my home. I should be able to read a book if I want to read a book. I should be able to take a really long shower if I want to without worrying that my husband's going to yell at me. I should be able to exfoliate my skin for as long as I want. And, you know, on a Saturday, even if there's dishes in the sink, I started to realize that I didn't deserve that type of behavior and that I was worth it. And as I began to love myself, I started to work on the deeper shit. The healing that needed to happen between me and my mom, me and my dad, the healing that I needed to do within myself. And everyone thinks that a spiritual journey is this beautiful, magical walk with unicorns and fairies and rainbows. It is not. It's ugly. It's crying. It's anxiety, panic attacks. Stuff is being brought out. And I went through that while I was married, while I was dealing with someone who was an alcoholic and abusive. And it was hard. And I finally got to a point towards the end of the marriage where the last 2 years, I just didn't care anymore. I didn't care about what he said. I let him drink. And like I said, I learned to just let it happen. And Luke and I would get up the next day and leave. We would go on walks. We would go to farmers markets. We became two separate people. We became roommates. And he'll say it's because I stopped loving him. It's because I stopped caring about the marriage. No, I realize that I do love him and I do love my son, but I love myself more. It's not selfish. It is not a bad thing to say that you love yourself more, because let me tell you something. If you don't love yourself, it's going to be really difficult to love someone else. And when I mean love, yes, you do want, you know, love everything about you, but value yourself, value your worth, value your time, value everything that you do, that you bring to the table. If not, when it comes to loving other people, it's going to be difficult in the sense that you're not going to be honest with yourself. And find out what your love language is. You know, if your love language is quality time, take yourself on a date. Even if you are married, and especially if you have a kid, you deserve it. Take yourself on a date. If your love language is words of affirmation, write post-it notes for yourself. I started doing that in my bathroom with lipstick. I started writing that I was beautiful and that I did have a beautiful vagina and that I was loved and that I did deserve love and that I was worthy. And he would see those things posted on the mirror and he would get so angry. And I learned to block them. I learned to ignore them. I learned that it was because he wasn't happy and content with himself. If your love language is gifts, treat yourself to something every now and then. If your love language is touch, go get a massage. Go get a weighted blanket and give yourself a really big hug. Hug someone. It's really important that we love ourselves, because when we love ourselves, our kids also start to see it too. And our kids start to notice that, hey, mom is confident. She's happy. And then we teach our kids to love themselves and be confident and value themselves, right? Super important. And I knew that I couldn't continue to grow and continue to appreciate myself in a setting like that. So I had to leave. I also realized that my values changed. And I realized that as a couple, we never spoke about values. Someone asked me recently what my values were, and I was easily able to answer them. And then this person asked me, when you were married, or like before you got married, did you know what values were, or did you just not have a clear understanding of what they were, or did you just not really acknowledge them? And I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember what the exact question was. I told this person, I don't think I knew what values were. I grew up in a very Christian home. And so then I told him, you know, no, I guess I knew what values were, but they were the values that my parents wanted from me, which was like, you know, respect your elders. You know, you don't steal, don't cheat, don't lie. I said, those were the values that my parents had. I never was allowed to have my own values. It was always what they wanted. So when I got married, I never asked what his values were. I just assumed we believed in the same things. I assumed we had the same values. And again, going back to how I was raised and with my parents, yes, I respected my mom and dad, absolutely. But it was respect out of fear, because that's what we were taught. I respected my mom and dad. I still do till this day. I now am not afraid of them. But when I was younger, I definitely respected them out of fear. It was, you respect me because I'm your parent and that's it. And if not, I'm going to spank you with the belt or with the vacuum cleaner cord, which is another conversation for another day. So when I got married, his values or his beliefs were mine, because I didn't know, right? Again, it goes to like, I don't know what I wanted. I was never asked what I wanted. I didn't care because I didn't love myself. And I just went along with the program because I thought that if I found someone who loved me enough, maybe they could fill that void. A big chunk of the reason why I got divorced, yes, it was abuse. Yes, it was alcoholism. But definitely, definitely, now I see its values are. My values changed as I learned to love myself, as I learned to not put up with the abuse, as I learned to not deal with the alcoholism, that I didn't deserve that. My values changed quickly. And our values were no longer in line. I remember asking him to spend quality time with me. And he would tell me, it's no longer our time, Aurora. We had our time when we dated. This is now the time for our child. I now know that if and when I do find someone, I want someone who's going to value quality time with me as an individual. Our parenting values were way off. I now know that I want someone who values my son's education and who's going to support me when I say, hey, our child needs this, and not just going to be very passive and say, don't worry, he'll grow out of it. I now know I want someone who values work. And by work, I don't mean work harder. I mean work smarter. someone who's going to want to build something with me. I thought that was this person. This person did not. We had many opportunities to grow, to financially grow, to grow together. But it meant that we had to do a little bit of work. The answer was, nah, I don't want to get my hands dirty. Guys, that's not me. If you know me, you know I'm a hard worker. You know I have a great work ethic. I'm not afraid of working. But I also want to work smarter. I want someone who's going to want to grow with me. Our values went completely in different directions. I knew that if I stayed there, I was going to be stuck. I did not want that. And I want more for my child and I want more for myself. That's perfectly okay. And it's okay to not want more. It's okay to be cool with what you got. But my values were changing and I needed space to grow. And I needed someone who was going to respect my new boundaries and my new values. And when I brought that to the table and when I would try to have these conversations, I was told, you knew what I was when I married you. This is it. You're the one that's changing. And it's true. I was the one that was changing, which brings me to my next point. I was evolving. We evolve all the time as human beings. It's in us, right? We change. And it's good to change. It's good to evolve. And if you have a really supportive partner that wants the best for you and that wants you to grow and change, then they're going to support that. And even if it's not something that aligns with them, just enough to give you the space or to respect that boundary. This person did not want to do that with me or for me. They wanted me to stay at the same exact level. And I'm sorry, but no, I had done that my whole life. And I realized I didn't want to do that anymore. And I realized that if I continue to stay there and not grow and not change and not evolve, then I was going to teach my child that it's okay to let someone cut your wings. And I want my child to know that there is a great big world out there, that there's tons of opportunities and he can do whatever he wants. And this person was not going to give us the space to do that. And as a parent, I genuinely want my child to do better and be better than me. And if I stayed there, that was not going to happen. I am now in a really good place where I can continue to grow and continue to make the changes that need to be made. And I can continue to grow and evolve as a parent, as an individual, as myself. And it's fucking fantastic. Lastly, I wanted to be happy. I was at dinner with a friend and they asked me, are you happy? And I said, that's irrelevant if I'm happy. Like, I'm married and you stay in the marriage because like we have a kid and how am I going to get a divorce? Like I have a kid. It doesn't matter if I'm happy. And this person said to me, that's where you're wrong because this is it, girl. You got one life. And if you're not happy, then you're going to live a really shitty life and you don't get a do-over. And I didn't realize that as a mom and a wife, I was allowed to be happy. My happiness still counted. I thought as long as my kid was happy and as long as my husband was happy, I was good. I was doing my job. I didn't realize my happiness counted too. And this was a theme that for a while kept reoccurring because then we went to dinner with my brother-in-law who told us the story of when he was in a relationship and the relationship ended because the person he was in a relationship with asked him, are you happy? And the response was, no, are you happy? No, neither am I. And they said, well, I really like you and I want what's best for you. So if you're not happy and I'm not happy, then maybe it's just better for just friends. Maybe this relationship has run its course. That was mind-blowing to me. And I asked him, what do you mean? And he said to me, yeah, life is too short to be in an unhappy relationship. We like each other. We respected each other. We loved each other. But ultimately, I just wasn't happy anymore. Neither was he. So why be in that relationship? And every day I would ask myself, are you happy? And if it took me longer than 5 seconds to answer that question for myself, then I probably wasn't happy. I am so fucking happy right now. Not all day. There are times of the day where I am unhappy, but I'm usually happy every day. And when we're happy, we're better people. It's a lot easier to be happy than it is to be angry. Believe me, I was angry for a really long time. It takes more energy to be angry. When we're happy, we're better parents. We're better sisters. We're better daughters. We're better lovers. It does so much more for you to be happy. Ask yourself, am I happy? And if something needs to change, maybe it's not divorce. Maybe you just need to work on your self-care. Maybe you need to work on your time management so you have the time to do the things that make you happy. Maybe you need to start, I don't know, working out more. Maybe you need to, you know, have some time to be creative. I don't remember ever feeling happy for more than a day or two when I was married. There are very few days when I was married that I can tell you that I was happy. Now, I can tell you that I have more happy days than unhappy days. I have more happy moments than miserable moments. And it is something that I strive for every single day, to find the joy and the happiness in something, especially when it comes to parenting. I strive to find the joy in parenting every day. It's something I ask myself on a daily basis. Did you find joy in parenting? What was the joyful thing that I did with my child? Do something that makes you happy every day. I mean, something really small. I encourage you that if you know someone that has dependency issues, that when they're ready and willing to get the help, you encourage them. I encourage you that if you have a man in your life or someone who doesn't like to talk about feelings, when they do talk about feelings with you, just listen and be open to it. Don't shame them. If you're a person out there that was in or is in the place that I was, and you're not ready to leave yet, let me just tell you that a time will come and you will know. I left many times and I went back. The last time I left, it took me a really long time to get there. It took me a lot of healing, took a lot of work, but I did. And it was the best decision I've ever made. It's what worked for me. If there is a person out there that are going through what I went through, know that you're not alone. Know that there is someone that can understand what you're going through. Know that it is hard to get help and it has to be on your time. But when you're ready, there are people out there that can and will help you, even if it is just to listen. Know that I'm here if you ever just need to listen. And know that you are so worthy of so much more. You're worthy of happiness. You are worthy of love. And you don't deserve whatever is being put on you. Divorce not might be the answer for you. It was the solution for me. But you'll figure it out. You got to do a little bit of work, but you'll figure it out. Thank you for sticking it out with me today. This was a long one, but I thought it was an important one. That is just the tip of the iceberg of my story. And as we get further along in the podcast, we'll go back and touch a little bit about all those reasons. But that's the gist of it, guys. That's why I am a single, divorced Latina. And I'm figuring myself all over again. I'm rebirthing myself. Thank you for listening. Thank you for allowing me in your space. Thank you for allowing me to share my space with you. And I encourage you to find something that you are happy for today. I will catch you guys on the next episode. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and share, because sharing is caring. Have a great day, and I will talk to you guys next time.